material. Kwacit kumari atmanam grinanan grinan agatan swayam tan aryanam arayam asa kwapi yateshu bandhushu. Kwacit kumari tu atmanam vrinanan grinam agatan swayam tan arayam asa kwapi yateshu bandhushu. Kwacit kumari tu atmanam vrinanan griham agatan swayam tan arayam asa kwapi yateshu bandhushu. Kwacit kumari tu atmanam vrinanan griham agatan swayam tan arhayam asa kvapiyateshu bandhushu. Mari tu atmanam kumari tu atmanam gryanam agim atmatam swayam tan ahrayam asa swapiyateshu bandhushu. Ladies, kochit, once. Kumari, a young girl. Two, indeed, atmanam, herself. Vrinanan, desiring as a wife. Griham, to the house. Agatan, arrived. Swayam, herself. Tan, those men. Arhayam, Asha, received with great hospitality. Kwapi, to another place. Yateshu, when they had gone. Bandhushu, all their relatives. Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Once a marriageable young girl was alone in her house because her parents and relatives had gone that day to another place. At the time, a few men arrived at the house, specifically desiring to marry her. She received them with all hospitality. Text 6. The girl went to a private place and began to make preparations so that the unexpected male guests could eat. As she was beating the rice, the conchal bracelets on her arms were colliding and making a loud sound. Text 7. The young girl feared that the men would consider her family to be poor, because their daughter was busily engaged in the menial task of husking rice. Being very intelligent, the shy girl broke the shell bracelets from her arms, leaving just two on each wrist. Text 8. Thereafter, as the young girl continued to husk the rice, the two bracelets on each wrist continued to collide and make noise. Therefore, she took one bracelet off each arm, and with only one left on each wrist, there was no more noise. Text 9. O subduer of the enemy, I travel throughout the surface of the earth, learning constantly about the nature of this world, and thus I personally witness the lesson of the young girl. Purport. The Brahman sage here explained to King Yadu that he is not presenting theoretical knowledge. Rather, by wandering throughout the world, the observant and thoughtful Brahmana has personally experienced the lessons learned from all of the above mentioned gurus. That instead of posing himself to be the omniscient like God, he humbly explains that he has faithfully learned these lessons in his travels. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Bano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Shahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Shute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. We've been reading about the conversation between the Avadhuta Brahmana and Maharaj Yadu, which is being quoted by Krishna to Uddhava, as to what the Avadhut Brahman learned in his travels around the world. And as he traveled, he sort of kept on taking diksha, not from one but multiple gurus. Diksha in the sense, the spiritual master is essentially there in our lives to teach us two things. To teach us transcendental knowledge, which is coming from the Evam Parampara. And second, to show us a perfect example of a person who is following those teachings in his very life. So he's a receiver of perfect knowledge, and he also is a perfect example of that knowledge. So by observing these two facts in a guru's life, a disciple learns so much about the process of Krishna consciousness. And here this wonderful Brahman who is traveling around is in the same way learning from so many gurus. And the example given here is about a young girl. We just read about her, that how she decided that she would break all her conch shell bracelets and get rid of all of them except one each, so that they don't make noise, so that she doesn't sort of misconstrue a wrong opinion among the guests, think that she is doing menial work, so there are no servants here, there is no enough rice in this house, so you know, like that. So she wanted to not keep a bad wrong impression about herself. So then it explains in the next verse, of course, that the lesson he learned from this is that we should remain alone. Just like, because when two people come together, there will be there will be noise. You know, in In every language, in Gujarati or when two vessels come together, they make noise, right? So in Marathi they say bhanda, right? Bhanda, bhanda. So the word bhanda and bhandana are very similar. So when there's bhanda starts colliding, then there is bhandan, which is the classic trait of Kali Yuga, quarrel. Right? So, in this way, we are learning that by being, as he said here, two things. The Brahmana's quality is described. That what is it within the Brahman that made him receptive? See, we also go through life. We are all going through life on a daily basis. And the question can be asked, are we learning through life? Of course, we learn primarily from the scriptures. That's undeniably the best process of descending process of knowledge, coming from Imam Parampara. Nonetheless, we do not undermine the value of life itself, which is itself a storehouse of so many experiences which we all go through from childhood till date. And we need to ask ourselves, how much have we learned from life itself, right? Like they say, you know, kitna Diwali dekha hai, right? Somebody has seen a lot of Diwalis, that means he has been in the world for so many years and he has learned. So in previous lives, when you talk about in previous times, let's say, when material education was not the main process of knowledge, in today's day, well, I may talk mainly about women, for example, that in our country, maybe 50 years ago, 60 years ago, the women were not materially educated, didn't go to school so much. Whether right or wrong is a debatable thing. That's something which is a sociological issue. But the fact remains that these ladies who grew up to be girls and they got married and then they had children and they had husband, they had in-laws, were absolutely very, very perfect in playing the role of mother, wife and daughter-in-law. Even though they had no academic knowledge, degrees, etc. Right? They were very, very conversant in the science of household life. Right? Even though they probably sometimes you didn't know how to read and write. What you would call them as, you know, anguta chap type of people. And yet they were so much expert in running household affairs. And on the other hand, we find girls these days who may be very academically qualified with degrees and multiple degrees and postgraduate, but maybe not so great in terms of household affairs. Right? So that means knowledge is not just about academics. So the Brahmana may not be a materially qualified person, but he had two qualities. He was observant and he was thoughtful. He was thoughtful. These are the two things. And therefore, a person who is tuned in, let me talk about this thing about getting tuned in. Like Krishna is sort of, you have different objects. Even on the world of physics, every object has an intrinsic frequency which it emanates, right? Or, I mean, if you tune into that frequency, you can go into the object. Or, for example, if a radio, we know what's a radio, right? We know television, right? So you have a channel which tunes into. In a radio, there is frequency. In a TV, there is a channel, right? But both are actually about frequencies of sound and light, right? Which is being emanated from some other person, from other place, to satellite, and is being received. So even though there are multiple things available on the television set, we can specifically choose to go to Sony TV or ZTV or MTV or X, Y, and Z. We can actually tune in even though everything is available on the set. Right? Similarly, the radio stations are so many radio stations, but you can tune into Akashwani and hear what they have to say. Similarly, the consciousness also is sort of being exposed like that radio television set to multiple frequencies all around us which are there everywhere in the ether. They are all stored in ether, and therefore ether is a complex network of so many electromagnetic radiations which are going on zigzag all over the atmosphere of the earth, right? And as to what we will really absorb, what you will really actually get is based on what frequency you tune into, right? So most people are tuned into, for example, sense gratification. They may be tuned into money or sex or this and that or name and fame, whatever. So they tune into that, and then everything which pertains to that particular subject is what they start catching. Okay, money. So if money is the tuning, you tune into money, then you keep on looking for opportunities for earning money. So then everything is about money. Right? Like, you know, we used to do this drama, remember? And I don't know if they do it still today, but you know, this drama about this Karodimal drama, right? It was a very funny one, but it was very wonderful. They were so tuned into money, right? And he was so conjuice, that is called conjuice Karodimal drama, right? I don't know if you have seen this beautiful, nice play. And he was so tuned into money that even when his father who died, so when Vishnu comes and said, okay, I will, perform the last rites. So he said, how much for the last rites? So he said, 250 rupees. He said, 250 rupees for last rites? I mean, you must be kidding, right? So he said, okay, 111 would be enough. See, 111, Brahman, you are this and that. He said, can you make it less? He said, 25 rupees and no less. He said, no. So ultimately, the bargain become to Sava Rupiah. To say, okay, Sava Rupiah, I'll get that for you, right? And then they get the wood, right? That is the Dakshina part, and then the wood is brought, and they bring so much wood. He said, so much wood, right? So he said, I wish I would be a person who was dealing in wood, because, you know, then so many people are dying every day, and I would get a lot of money by selling wood. So much wood, he said, can you make the wood less? So he just goes on. He's such a conjuice person, and then ultimately, the drama is very funny. But in the end, Vishnu reveals himself and says, "I'm so happy with you because you are like the most conjuice person I've ever seen in my life." So he said, "I bless you." Anyway, so he was tuned into nothing but money, right? So on a personal level, we have the service where we perform annual dramas. So that's something which comes up even more in our life during this time. So I was playing a role in a particular drama on Ladini Mataji on an African. So the role given to me was, I was supposed to be Prince Johnson, who was a dictator in Liberia who killed so many people in Liberia, a million people and more. He was a dictator, one of the dictators there among the seven warring parties. And he was the one who was sadly and cruelly the cause of the death of Vaishnavas, including Ladini Devi. So I was supposed to play that cruel role. And I was supposed to speak not like why I'm speaking now, so to speak like an African. How do I learn how to speak like an African? You know? So, and then I was sitting in Mira Road, and where I stay, and then I climb into the train, right? And I saw an African, right? So otherwise Africans keep, in Mira Road there are a good number of Africans there. When you see them every day, they don't attract you. You don't tune into them at all. I said, no, you keep on doing your own thing. But he was there and he was talking on the phone to somebody, right? And I started listening. Because I was tuned into African language and I wanted to learn how to talk like an African. I started hearing him and I said, oh, this is the way they talk. And I started practicing, right? So when you really actually tune into things, some other time we were performing a drama on a great devotee called Bhagya Chandra. Is a Vaishnava from Manipur area who brought the Manipuri culture in this world of dance, music, etc. Right? So it was the first time we had no contact with Manipuri people. There's no Manipuri I knew. None of us knew. And we were at the station, right? My wife and myself, and we wanted to make a Manipuri dress because Manipuri is totally different than this dress. They wear a different dress. They have this funny and all that different thing. And lo and behold, on station comes a Manipuri person wearing that dress. Said, oh wow. And we observed how they are dressing and this and that, and we just went further. So the point is that depending on how we tune into various things, we can get various frequencies. So, Prabhupada, in his purports in various places, being a very observant person, we have examples of Radhanath Swami who traveled, not the world, but at least he traveled a large part of the world, how these great souls, they learned life lessons from observing phenomena, right? So Prabhupada writes about, for example, just because it comes to mind, is about a donkey, a she donkey and a male donkey, right? when a male donkey comes to approaches a female donkey for his natural urges to be satisfied, and how the female donkey with her hind legs just beats the male donkey very hard on the face, right? So this is something which has not come from the scripture, it's come by observation. And the Radhana Swami said, I would observe, you know, and I would want to observe every phenomenon Prabhupada writes in his books on an actual level and draw lessons from that. Because those lessons were very, very powerful, right? When you see a burning body die at Manikarnika Ghat, it's very powerful, right? So life teaches you lessons. You just happen to be to go to Banaras and just go for, you know, this and that and, you know, Ganga Bath and fine, that's all pious. But if you happen to be at Manikarnika Ghat and you just stand there for a while and see a body burning or a couple of bodies burning, right, then that will give you realizations far more deeper than reading about the body is nashwar, the body is temporary, and the body is going to be destroyed by the fire of the funeral pyre. Reading that and actually seeing it is a powerful experience. And a few weeks back we were at Banaras and we saw a body burning at Manikarnika Ghat, and it brought alive to the fact how the body is actually. So in this way, just going through life itself is such a beautiful, beautiful thing. If you, as I said, tune into things. Prabhupada talks about, for example, you know, in the Shastra, the example about the chariot is there. The chariots are always there till chariots got extinct and cars came in. So then Prabhupada talks about, the Shastra talks about the chariot, how the charioteer is the person, who's the passenger, and then there's a driver who's driving the chariot, and then there's this chariot as the body, and the five senses are there, and the mind is the lagam, the reins, right? So this way this is explained. And Prabhupada took this analogy, and how commonly, how often he used analogy of a phenomenon which we see every day. We go through life every day, we see cars every day. But Prabhupada was a person who made this kind of analogy so accessible to make understand a most powerful concept of the difference between the body and the soul, right? And even though something is so basic to our Krishna conscious training, that the first few days you go into a JOSD course, which Gopinath Prabhu is taking and others take, I'm sure we all use this example profusely, right? About making people understand in the audience that we are not the body, that we are not the car. Just like when we drive a car, we are not the car, we are the driver in the car. So it's a phenomena which you see every day. But an acharya can even see a car. Everyone drives a car, but nobody thought about it. Cars have been there in this world for several decades. But nobody thought that, yes, if, you know, just like I'm sitting in this car, the car is not me, so also the body is not me. But it took a person like Prabhupada to actually see a car and make this very powerful understanding. And then how all of us today, we accept this analogy as a part of our life. And when you hear it, it makes so much sense to us. That yes, if you follow, I feel this body is mine. Well, hello, this is the car. And this body is a vehicle for me, the soul. Yantra Rudhani Mayaya. This body is a machine. And therefore it makes so much sense to us, right? And when Prabhupada talks about the cage and the bird, such beautiful examples, right? That we are, you know, the ladies, the BTG, I remember the reading BTGs years ago, right, where this painting is there, that this old lady with the white hair, she's cleaning the cage. It's a something simple thing, a cage and a bird, right? Nothing great about it. And yet, the lesson is so powerful that we are busy, involved in taking care of the cage, and the bird is not being fed. So we address all our spiritual, our physical needs, emotional needs, and forget to address our spiritual needs. And therefore, I found this very interesting, because what we're talking about as Brahman is something which is also the thought process of a great Mahajan Acharya like Shukdev Goswami. Now, Shukdev Goswami, when he's talking about Srimad Bhagavatam for the 7 days, he's a very observant person. Please remember, even Shukdev Goswami traveled around the world. He also walked around and he saw various phenomena, right? Even though he's tuned into the Golok Vrindavan consciousness, yet a devotee learns about the creator from the creation. That's the whole point. That then since the creator creates the creation, his chhap is there, his, you can say, his influence comes through. Just like, for example, a father and a mother, they produce a child. Father and mother are the creator and the child is the effect. But the effect carries the cause within it also. How? The genes, right? The child carries the genes of the parents, and therefore the cause manifests in the effect as well, right? Similarly, whatever effects we see here in this world, all natural phenomena, every natural phenomena for that matter, carries within itself the hidden influence of the invisible Lord within it, right? And therefore, if we were to not just focus on academic knowledge, as we always do, to get our degrees and make our career and make an earning in this world, but also be tuned into natural phenomena, then we would learn much about God, much about Krishna, much about the Creator, simply by looking at the phenomena in this world. And the proof is somebody as great as Sukadeva Goswami. There's a whole chapter in the 10th canto, 28th chapter, called the Rainy Season and Autumn in Vrindavan, right? And more than 20 shlokas are Sukadeva Goswami just talking about natural phenomena. I love that the similar Avadhut Brahman, learning, and even communicating to Parishad Maharaj and to all the sages who are gathered, and through them to all of us, that how by natural phenomena you can learn about life. So I want to just read a few things just to, you know, substantiate this point, what Avadhut Brahman is talking about, and following Sukadeva Goswami's footsteps, hopefully, as we go through our life in various ways, it also start picking up signals of what is being revealed around us. And not become blind, and not become unconscious. When a person is Krishna conscious, or at least trying to be Krishna conscious, let's say, that's what we are trying to be Krishna conscious. But even if you are trying to, that means you are tuning into Krishna, Krishna will reveal essential lessons about himself through natural phenomena. So for example here, the forest fire story is over. Krishna swallowed the forest fire, and then Sukadeva Goswami talks about the rainy season. So the dry part is over and the rainy season is come in Vrindavan. The sky was then covered by dense blue clouds, accompanied by lightning and thunder. Thus the sky in its natural illumination was covered in the same way. And so he's connecting everything now. The spirit soul is covered by the three modes of nature. The sky is covered by clouds, just like we are covered by material nature. Flashing with lightning, great clouds were shaken and swept about by fierce winds. Just like merciful persons, the clouds gave their lives for the pleasure of the world. Just like clouds are showering rain, so merciful people also shower mercy on the world. Very nice one over here. This sloka number 8. And the evening twilight during the rainy season. So you can imagine this, right? We may not even see, but at least you can tune into Sukadeva Goswami's words here. In the evening twilight during the rainy season, the darkness allowed the glowworms, but not the stars, to shine forth. Because the clouds are, the stars are already covered by the clouds, but the glowworms are allowed to shine. Just as in the age of Kali, how Sukadeva Goswami immediately connects. In the age of Kali, the predominance of sinful activities allows atheistic doctrines to glow and overshadow the true knowledge of the Vedas. Natural phenomena connected to powerful principles of dharma. There are many of them. Just one more and then we'll end. Just as the devotees whose minds are absorbed in the personality of Godhead remain peaceful even attacked by all sorts of dangers, the mountains in the rainy season were not at all disturbed by the repeated striking of rain-bearing clouds. Right? So how nice. So just a mountain is being smashed by heavy rains, heavy thundering, the mountain remains undisturbed. So he talks about how devotees, when they're connected to Krishna, even though there is dangers affecting their lives, they remain undisturbed. And there are so many of them. So this is like a study that when the rainy season comes in, which is going to be in the next 2 months, if you read this chapter, we will tune into Sukadeva Goswami's observations and learn much about life just looking at the rainy season. right? So, in this way, Maharaj was talking once about, for example, like, you know, when you think about it, you sit at the, on the bank of a river, Radhanath Swami, right? That is one of his very repeated themes coming in his book. So, he was a wandering mendicant and he learned about life so much from the river, right? And he talks about how at one time he was sitting there and then there's a fish floating, you know, on the surface, playing around as usual, like on a regular day. And then suddenly an eagle comes in and swoops down and picks up one fish and goes away, right? And the fish is now in the jaws of death. Fish is finished, right? So also, we also go through life in the regular way. Nothing's going to go wrong. Everything's going to be fine. We just play our life like that as if there's no danger around us. But dangers of time. Padam padam yat vipadam natesham. There can be danger any time and your life could end. And therefore, the need to always remain tuned to Krishna consciousness. Right? So in this way, this Adwaita Brahman is teaching us something very beautiful. How we can allow our consciousness to be always observant around and look at even things like growing trees. For example, we talk about six changes of life, right? The body goes changes. And those things are exactly compared to a plant. A seed, then a sapling, then a tree, then flowers, then some stage of maintenance, dwindling, and then dying. So just by looking at the changing bodies of a plant or changing part of a, you know, the shloka of changing bodies and the soul remaining the same is simply natural phenomena, right? So in this way, it is very interesting and it makes spiritual life very dynamic, that we do not limit Krishna consciousness to only the books or to the Bhagavatam class or to our giving a talk or doing a prayer time. But we remain tuned into Krishna consciousness or to Krishna or to God even through life. So we hear from Bhagavatam, that's extremely important to carry the mood of going through life and keep learning. And keep learning. Like for example, we say that Krishna's inconceivable Shakti, you can see, the other day this example was nicely quoted, right? That we say Krishna has got unchitin Shakti. How? So for example, simple thing in rainy season, now, someone has to paint. Haridas Thakur Prabhu has painted these nice paintings around, right? So, he needs a canvas, and he needs a paint, and he needs a brush, right? And you need a painter, right? But when you go to, when monsoon arrives, we see a beautiful painting in the sky. What is that? A rainbow. Now, who made the rainbow? Where is the artist? The colors are so beautifully defined. Violet, indigo, blue, yellow, orange, red, green. It's defined. Beautiful. There is no painter there. It's just in the air. It's not resting on any canvas. It is just in the air. And it yet so beautiful. Right? Indra Dhanush. It's a bow. Indra is given the name because Indra is the controller of rain. So this name is also given to him, Indra Dhanush. He made this bow. And this is Krishna Achindya Shakti. It stays for a while, for a few minutes, right? And then it disappears. Which artist in the world can draw in air? You can draw on water. Yes, you can draw on water also. You can make flower paintings on water, right? Mayadana made a lot of things happening in Indraprastha, which Duryodhana got bewildered. So he did things which were not like, ooh, you didn't understand. But is there any artist anywhere in the world who can draw in air? The answer is no, because only Krishna can do that, right? So in this way, if we tune into Krishna nicely, we will remain so much absorbed in the Lord's consciousness. I want to share a few thoughts and words about today's darshan as well. It is a very special darshan. Like, we've been having special darshans every day for the last, I think, 15 days or so. Next Tuesday will be the last darshan, end of Chandan Yatra. But so we are having the blessing of seeing today Ranchod Raiji, who is hailing from Dakor, and also the darshan of Guruvayurappan, who hails from Kochi in Ernakulam, right? So this particular deity of the Lord is a very special deity. This deity was given by Lord Brahma was given to Brahma by Vishnu himself when he was about to go into the process of creation. He said, you worship this deity, and this deity will empower you with the power of creative energy. So Vishnu gave it to Brahma and was lying with him in his abode. And then a little later, Prishni and Sutapa desires to have a child. They also were very keen and worship Lord Brahma to bless them, right? And they prayed. They prayed for having a son. And they prayed 3 times to have a son. So then it is said, the Brahmaji gave this deity to Prishni and Sutapa and said, you worship this deity and you will be blessed with the fulfillment of your desire. So since they had asked for the Lord 3 times, they would have to take 3 births, beautiful births, as parents of God himself, of Krishna, right? The first time the Lord came as Prishni Garbha, when they were Prishni and Sutapa. The next time they came as Aditi and Kashyapa, when the Lord came to them as Vamanadev. And third time they came as Vasudev and Devaki, and when the Lord came to them as Sakshat Purnapurushottam Bhagavan Sri Krishna, right, in the land of Mathura. So this deity was worshipped by Mother Devaki herself. In all three avatars, all three incarnations, they had a chance to worship this deity as per Brahma's blessings. So this deity came from way beyond Satyuga, many millions of millennium ago, right? It came down and it was worshipped in Mathura by Vasudeva and Devaki. And as you know the story, when Jarasandha attacked, Kalayavan attacked, there was danger to Mathura. So then the Lord had carried all the citizens of Mathura and installed them safely under the water at Dwarkapuri, right? And in there the Lord stayed for several decades, almost more than 100 years, 125 years or so, right? However, the Lord had to finish his wind up his leela, and therefore he had to go to his Swadham. As the Lord went, it was predicted that the Dwarka would again get covered over after 7 days in a deluge of water. And that really happened. But this deity was so special, the deity sort of came to the surface. So Krishna had told Uddhava that take care of this deity. So Uddhava was the last person, if you remember, Uddhava was the last person he met before winding up his mortal leela, his manifest leela. So Uddhava was there and he saw this deity in this deluge of the ocean. And says, how do I get this deity? My Lord told me to take care of this deity. So then he was there and Vayu, he prayed to Vayu. The Vayu then slowly beat the deity gradually towards the shore. The Lord held, Uddhava held this deity in his hand. And he was told by the demigods that Brihaspati would actually help you to reinstall the deity in the right place. So where does he get Brihaspati? So Brihaspati manifested as a Brahmana, right? He came there, just happened to be there and said, okay, how can I serve you? So he said, I'm Brihaspati. So by the mercy of the Vayu Devta, he floated this deity. Vayu Devta is very powerful. So he became like the carrier of this deity. And he brought him to this place. And then they brought him to this place in Dakshin Bharat. So Brihaspati was installed within charge of figuring out where the Lord should go, in a very auspicious, proper place where the Lord would be taken care of. So he met Lord Shiva there. The place called Rudra Tirtha is there. Apparently, Prachetaras worship Shiva in that place as well, is believed, Puranically. So then Lord Shiva was there with his mother Parvati. And he said, okay, I'm glad that you all are here. This is the place you should install the Lord. So Lord Shiva was very happy that the Lord would come next to him as a sort of next door neighbor. So then he indicated the place. And with the blessings of Guru, that is Brihaspati and Vayu, so Guru and Vayu put together, this deity was installed in the place where the Lord resides even now for the last 5,000 years. Right? So it's a very special form. It's Krishna. And yet, of course, sometimes he's shown in the 400 form, but it is Krishna, the 200-hour Krishna, Vrindavan Krishna. He's there as Guru Vayur. And he's worshipped there with so much of love and devotion. Well, there are many specialities of this temple, but one feature of this temple also is that the elephant is a prominent part of the worship of the Lord. Because as we know, Kerala and the Dakshin Bharat, a lot of elephants are there. Now maybe not so much, but there used to be a lot of elephants there. So even now, the Utsav Murti of Guru Vayurappan is carried on the back of the elephant 3 times in a day, every day, for a ride, for a pleasure ride in the surrounding Parikrama path, right? So a few 100 years ago, I do not know exactly when, some of you may know, there is a very a pure devotee of the Lord in the form of an elephant. His name was Keshavan. So he's there in one of those eight. You can see eight elephants there. We don't know who, but one of them is Keshavan. So that's, we want to remember today him also, his great devotion. How bhakti is so special that bhakti is non-specific to any species of life. Krishna is so accessible to all forms of life. Even if you are a vulture, as Jatayu, or a monkey like Hanuman, or like a bear like Jambavan, or even an elephant. The Lord is accessible, being the father of all living entities, he accepts worship in any form of life. Right? So Keshavan was very, as we said before, tuned into Guru Ayurappan's seva. He was specifically there, and he would sort of not allow other elephants to, there's a little bit of competition there, I guess, right? So, that's eagerness, that's not really envious competition, but it's eagerness to carry the Lord on his back. Because there are so many other elephants that said, no, the Lord would come on me, right? So he was identified as a person who was so much devoted to the Lordship's seva. And the Lord would always go on his back, these so many hundred years ago, every day. And there are many stories which are being said about him. Apparently he had his ancestors also. One elephant called Padmanabhan was there. And he sort of gained his devotion from his ancestors, it is believed. As years rolled by, of course, you know, the body gets old and you become ineffective in offering your seva, which happens to all of us. So it was a holy day of Ekadashi. And they went to, you know, sort of ask an elephant, please come, we must take the Lord today. And the elephant was not able to move. So he's very weak, he's very old. It's the day of Ekadashi. But he actually somehow managed to sort of just come up to the temple of the Lord. In front of the Lord's form, he dropped his body. Right? So wonderful. And I'm sure he went to his eternal abode of the Lord. So we can see that this beautiful pastimes of Krishna and his associates. So we are blessed today to remember Keshavan, to remember Guruvayur, and the place Guruvayur is of course filled with so much of piety, so much of holiness. People there recite holy scripture called as Narayaniyam, I'm told. There's a Brahmin there who was paralyzed. You see how the Lord reciprocates with his devotees, right? What is bhakti? What is bhakti? You're talking about bhakti, right? You say bhakti, bhakti, bhakti. What is bhakti? Bhakti is, in one sense, very simple. It is the reciprocation of the Lord and his devotees performing wonderful pastimes. And our bhakti is to simply hear them and follow in the footsteps of those devotees who had pastime with the Lord. That's what bhakti is all about, right? So this wonderful Brahmana was paralyzed and, well, he became sort of invalid. Someone said, you should go and glorify the Lord and you will get your energy back in the lost arms and leg. So he would go to the temple every day and he begged the Lord to kindly empower him to write something about him. So the Brahmana started writing about him. So he wanted to glorify the Lord's Dashavatar, right? So he had 10 slokas per chapter. So Matsyavatar, 10 chapters. Varahavatar, 10 slokas. So he made like that. But it didn't come to 10 chapters, it went to 100 chapters. Because the 10th canto, Krishna's chapter is very large, right? More than Varaha, more than Narasimha, very large. Almost 40 chapters are devoted to discovering Krishna in his Dasham Skanda, avatar of Krishna himself as Leela Purushottam. So the 100 chapters are there, about 1,000 verses, right? So people there, they glorify the Lord, Guru Vayur, they worship the Lord, just like we glorify the Lord here in Mahaprabhu's Sampradaya by Kirtan. That's our way of worshipping Krishna. That's a bona fide process of worshipping Krishna in Kali Yuga, to Nam Sankirtan. Over there, they worship the Lord by reciting the Narayaniyam. That's how they glorify him. And the Lord is very happy to hear about his own pastimes as described by this Brahmana. Also, we have today the blessing of, some of you may not have visited Dakor, it's a place close to Baroda, but the Lord has appeared here through the hands of his dear pujaris, who have given us nice darshan of Dakorji. Dakorji is called as Ranchodarai. You know that this one of Krishna's millions of names, Anantakoti names, is Ranchod. Jisne Ran ko chod diya, right? One who ran away from the battlefield, because you know only cowards run away from battlefield. Nobody else runs away. And Krishna, of course, is a Kshatriya. He's a son of Vasudev. So how could he be a coward, right? And yet, he didn't mind being called a coward for the rest of eternity because he had better things to do than fighting a war. He had his own personal affairs to attend to. So he left his, he had Rukmini thing was there and all that was sort of, some things were happening in Dwarka which he had to attend to, right? So he left the fight with Jarasandha. Jarasandha already had fought with him and, you know, he had defeated Jarasandha 17 times. So it has already proved that Jarasandha is no match for Krishna, correct? It's already proved. When somebody is defeated 17 times and very badly that too, each time made to become like, you know, an animal and with ropes, you know, you're really humiliated so bad. So there's no scope of, you know, defeating your enemy again the 18th time because sometimes you have been just rooted badly. Each time 21 Akshamandi divisions just smashed to pieces. There's almost a flood of blood created. So anyway, Krishna said, okay, forget Jarasandha. I've already defeated him 17 times. He's already finished. I do more important things in my life. So he left. So the Lord is worshipped in this place as that Lord who ran away from the battlefield as Ranchodarai. And there are many beautiful stories there. One story, the Lord would be happy to mention the name here of his very dear devotee called Bodhana. As a very dear devotee. As we know, Krishna is also this Parthasarathi. But that Leela didn't happen once, but happened twice, where Krishna rode his own devotee's chariot. One was of course for his dear devotee Arjun on the battlefield of Kurukshetra for 18 days. And yet, again, Bodhana used to live in a distant place from Dakor, several miles away. And he would visit on the day, I believe, I could be wrong, but I think on Purnima day, every Purnima he would visit the Lord, right? And that was like his regulation. Like so many people do, they visit so many places on Purnima day, right? And today this practice continues where Purnima is like auspicious day of the month. So people visit holy places. So he would visit from his distant village, Dakor, for worshipping the Ranchodarai ji, right? This happened a few hundred years ago also. So then he became old, like Tukaram Maharaj from Dehu to, even today also, some people go from Dehu, Alandi to Pandharpur. It's even today people do that. On every Purnima day, that's something which is so sacred to our culture, Vaishnava culture. So he became about 71 years old, if I remember well. That's quite a bit of age to walk through, no vehicles, no trains, no other vehicles. So you just walk through. And that time he said to the Lord, that my dear Lord, I don't think I can come again. And it's just a difficult thing for me to come. My joints have gone weak and my body is so frail, I don't think I can go again. So please accept this as my final visit to your lordships and excuse me if I cannot come. And he offered his final prayers because his body is going to become so frail and he'll leave this world at any point of time. So then he would sleep in the night in the temple courtyard somewhere. And there arose a little bit of rumor there that maybe the Lord will go away with Bodhana. Because everyone knew there that he comes every Purnima. So he was already recognized as a prominent visitor of this place. He was a special visitor, special pilgrim. So some sort of rumors were there. And so they actually sort of cordoned away the temple that the Lord would not go away. Because everyone knows, like, you know, Banke Bihari temple, the Lord is so bhakta vatsal. He sees somebody praying, he may just jump over the altar and say, okay, I'm coming with you, Haribol. Lord is very spontaneous in his love, correct? So, but yet, he had, you know, come on what they call as a gada. Gada means this small cart. So then, there's a cart there, and the Lord actually escaped out of the temple and went on this side by cart, and Bodhana said, get up, Bodhana, let's go, right? So he said, he just saw that, so frail, he said, okay, you sleep behind on the cart and I will take you back to your village. So the Lord rode the cart, the bullock cart, back to the village of Bodana, right? And here these people came to know in the morning that the Lord is not there on the altar. Oh, obviously, there was a big, what happened there? But they sort of almost understood that there is very big likelihood that he has gone back to his dear devotee. So they went there. The whole story there of, there was a sort of struggle there, a bit of conflict there. Things happened. And the Lord actually was hid in a place. It's called Gomti River. We go to Dhaka today also. The Lord is hidden there in that water. It's a very sacred water. That lake was created by Bhimsen in his travels when he was going with the Pandavas. So that is a very sacred place created by Bhimsen. That whole talab was created by him. Lord was put in the Gomti River. And then the story ends. I'm speaking very fast. Time is ended. So then the Lord actually, the Brahmanas who come from Dakota said, okay, you must give the deity back to us. And it was revealed that actually the deity will not go back. But he said, if you don't want to give the deity back to us, then give us gold enough of the deity's weight. Okay? That would be a good deal. So the Bodana said, well, you know, look at me. I have nothing. So his devoted wife came up. So the Lord was kept on the scale. Other side, he was supposed to put gold. But where is the gold? There's no gold. So she removed her nose ring. We call it Nath. Nathani. Right? And put it on with one tulsi. And Nathani, she put it on the scale. Devotion. The Lord doesn't have a material weight. But the weight of tulsi and a pure devotee is enough to make the Lord surrender to that love. He's always feels himself very happy to submit himself to his devotee's love, pure love. So then this Nathani was given. He said, oh, this, that's all. Well, this is the Lord's weight. You know? So what can you do? So they had to, you know, they had made their own deal. And so now, so that scale, at least some other scale, I don't know what scale, the scale is still there in Bodana, in Dakor. And even now, on holy days, when they want to do charity, you know, then when a child is born, the child is put on one side and, you know, rice enough of the weight of the child, or, you know, gold or silver or coins or bananas or coconuts, whatever else, you know, so tulabhar, that thing which is there. So in this way, our life is very auspicious, because coming to this temple and seeing these beautiful darshans of the Lord, and when we go out, when we carry this, if we can simply manage to tune in our frequency, like we heard about Prahlad Maharaj from Gaurangpur the other day, how he was tuned into the Krishna Graha. Because he tuned to Krishna Graha completely, so the Krishna Graha was completely focusing on his grace on Prahlad, and therefore he went through all dangers of life protected by the Krishna Graha. So in this way, if you can tune into the Krishna Graha, into Krishna himself, right, through chanting, through prayer, through smaranam, through all the Navida Paksprasa Bhakti, and we'll be protected as we go through our journey of life. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Ranchot Rai Bhagavan ki jai. Shri Guru Airappan Bhagavan ki jai. Keshavan ki jai. Hare Krishna.